welcome to another episode of the Five Rounds Podcast, the only podcast out there with the cardio for those deep water championship rounds. I am Mags, and with me today, my son Carlos. Carlos, how are you?
I'm not too bad, how are
you? Yeah, I'm tired, disappointed. Let's get on to this and try and knock it out fairly quick, unlike the fighters who were on the card. So basically, we've just finished watching UFC Fight Night, Rozenstruik versus Cyril Garn, Vegas 20, I believe it is. A non-fight card after a few more dropouts. It seems like UFC cards over the last couple of weeks have been very cursed. So through these prelims, we started in the light heavyweight division with Dustin Jacoby picking up the decision against Maxim Grishin. Then the only finish of the night with Ronnie Lawrence getting the KO against Vince Chichero in the bantamweight. Decision in the women's bantamweight with Alexis Davis getting the win over Sabina Matzo. And then the featured prelim, Thiago Moises picking up the decision against Alexander Hernandez. First fight on the main card, it was originally, I think, going to be Angela Hill, but unfortunately her fight got cancelled due to COVID related issues. She would have broke the record for the most amount of strawweight fights as well in the UFC, so a massive shame for her. But we ended up starting with Alex Caceres, Bruce Leroy, taking on Kevin Kroon. Went to a decision. A pretty fair decision for Caceres. I felt that on the feet he was easily the more dominant fighter. But even with Kroon and his quality BJJ, Caceres was able to defend the takedowns very, very well, get some of his own kind of takedowns against the fence. For someone like Kroon, who is so much shorter than Alex Caceres, he was good at bullying him and really like forcing him up against the cage. But Caceres' defence up against the cage, and then even when he was on his back on the ground with the body triangles and the attempts at arm bars and stuff like that, Caceres just absolutely dominated the fight and got away with a very quality unanimous victory.
Yeah, and you can't argue that at the end of the day it's a fair victory. Overall, showing that he was a better mixed martial artist, he was able to switch his game up rather than just trying to go for the grappling side. He was able to show what he had on the ground, show that he was able to defend, and show that he was able to have offensive and defensive boxing on the feet. So yeah, for me, like, we're a fair decision, can't argue with the judges with that.
Yeah. Next we'll go into Pedro Munhoz and Jimmy Rivera in the bantamweight division. For me, this was fight of the night. Absolutely, two guys who went at each other like they owed each other fucking money. They wanted to beat the living piss out of each other. Great boxing from both, really kind of like getting in the pocket, but there was one clear winner, and it all came down to Pedro Munhoz and that use of that calf kick. Wow. He, within a minute of the first round, he had swelled up Jimmy Rivera's calf to the point where Jimmy was having to shake it off every time it took a shot. When Jimmy did come forward, he hits like a bloody tank. For someone so small, he's built like a barrel, and he just was able to land some big shots. And Munhoz was a couple of times where he was very, very shaken in the fight, but he gave in terms of punches back as much as he got with some of those stinging left hooks. But the winner was those calf kicks. And when we get into like the second and third round, the shots were that hard. They were taking Rivera down to the floor, and Rivera was just really, really struggling to get any movement on that lead leg. In the third round, he's trying to switch to southpaw, which you can tell he wasn't left-handed and he didn't feel comfortable at it, and he was forcing himself to not switch back. But yeah, it's a great victory for Pedro Munhoz, and really kind of a that should move him well into the ranking and put him in maybe the conversation for a title eliminator.
Could possibly well be. Obviously, the game plan going in there, he were able to execute that, like you said, a calf kick perfectly, and he's got under a new coach who's a Muay Thai coach. He's one of the best from American Top Team.
Mm-hmm.
So it weren't really anything different bar from him. But they say kicking a lot of the elbows and kicking a lot of the calves, and he weren't really showing any damage himself, bar from his other leg that was a bit of swelling from where Rivera was returning his own. But Rivera had him hurting a couple of times, like in the first round he had him stunned, and then later on in the third round. So he's dangerous all round, is Rivera. So you've got to always watch him when a three round fight or a five round fight. You've always got to watch his fists, because he's got danger in both of them. And if he hits you clean, you'll know about it. And obviously, Moraes, he's already been beat off Rivera, and this were one of them fights where we were coming into, and it's like, I've become the better fighter and I'm going to beat you today. And he were able to go in there and have a perfect game plan and show that.
Yeah, what was it? It's like nearly 5.5 years since they last fought. And Munhoz gets that victory back, and I think this fight probably had a lot more importance than the fight in 2015. So a great game plan by Munhoz. You can't fault him for that. Going into the middle of the card, and we had another women's fight in the flyweight division this time. Montella De La Rosa taking on Mayra Bueno Silva. Interesting fight. Really, kind of the breakdown of this fight comes to that defense grab by Bueno Silva in the first round, where she was basically used the fence to stop a takedown, which is an instant point deduction. I think that proved pivotal in this, because all the way through the fight it was very razor thin. You had De La Rosa doing well in the clinch, and doing well in terms of trying to keep Bueno Silva up against the fence. But then you have Bueno Silva, who was really good at the dirty boxing and getting the shots off and at the attempts at to take it to the ground. But unfortunately for Bueno Silva, that point has proven very, very pivotal, because it meant that she got a majority draw. All three rounds were pretty much a lot of the same, going through them, the same kind of tactics. There was no real change-up. You had Bueno Silva going for submissions, and you had De La Rosa able to kind of clinch up against the fence and pick off some shots. But yeah, the judges gave it, I think one judge gave it to Bueno Silva 28-27, but the rest of the judge, the other judges gave it 28-28, and we get a majority draw. I think De La Rosa can thank her lucky stars that Bueno Silva grabbed that fence in the first round, and because I think she was on for a beating in this.
Definitely, if she didn't grab that fence, she would have won the fight, and that's as simple as that. And De La Rosa, she was a lot grappling heavy in this fight, and to be honest with you, that's what made her pay. She was eating a lot of knees, and when she was eating a lot of knees clean to the face, it's not good. Like, look at her eye, that's definitely a broken orbital.
And then the broken nose from the knee in the middle of the third round as well.
Yeah, so she played a very dangerous game in there, and use a face as bait a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Going into the core main event, Nikita Krylov, who has been doing bits since he dropped down from heavyweight. I think they said he was 7-1 at light heavyweight, and then Magomed Ankalaev, who is he still unbeaten in? Oh no, 6-1 in the UFC now. Both vying to kind of push their way through that the top five of the light heavyweight division. But to be fair, I don't think this fight did any of them any favours. These two guys are known for not even getting out of the first round, getting on quick finishes. So I was at least hoping that this fight kind of kicked on and we got some finishes. But unfortunately, it really wasn't to be. The first round, I felt that maybe Krylov had the better of it. He was landing better shots. Ankulev did well to keep the fight in the clinch and push it up against the cage and try and battle for position. And I think that's where Krylov struggled in this first round. He got took to the ground and he got locked up a little bit. But when he was able to get it on the feet, he was landing some good shots. Second round, it was kind of more of the same for Ankulev. He was able to find more of his shots in range. He was able to stuff the takedowns that we saw from Krylov, but then also land his own takedowns. Then going into the third, I felt that Krylov kind of woke up a little bit. Maybe he was going to maybe push for the win. Unfortunately, the quality of Ankulev's ground game and the big right hands that he had were just picking Krylov off. And I felt that Ankulev barely scraped and deserved the decision with just the better work rate than Krylov, and unfortunately Krylov has dropped a fighter in the lightweight division.
Yeah, definitely. You can see why judges give it to Ankulev, but this was one of the most boring fights I've watched in a long time. It was. There was nothing that really was. These, like you say, these two were known for finishers. They didn't know for not getting out the first round. And it was the sleep fest. Like, I was going to sleep halfway through it. I'm like, what's going on in this fight? Like, this is not in their characteristics to go to the decision. You have been saying it prior, like, yeah, the judges are going to be watching, but they're not going to be needed. Well, they were in this one. So, yeah, you can't argue with it. Ankulev had the better work rate and he was able to just edge it over the finish line quicker than his opponent, and the judges seen it that way as well.
Yep. So let's get into this main event, and this again did not go how we expected to go. These are again like Krylov and Ankulev, two fighters who very rarely take it out of the first round. Rozenstruik, who Michael Bisping put it perfectly on commentary as having nuclear bombs for fists, and Cyril Gane, who's quite quickly, I mean, I think this was only his fourth UFC fight, but he's become one of my favourite heavyweights to watch, because he's got a very wide range of skills. He almost fights kind of like a middleweight, the way he's like bouncing on his feet, and he's always like in and out looking for the angles. They're very much not like, there's not a lot of heavyweights that fight like this guy. So it was a disappointing watching this fight, because Rozenstruik just did not come to have a fight. He came to, maybe he was kind of bulled by the way he beat Overeem, where he took four and three quarter rounds worth of punishment and then landed that one killer blow. But it didn't work with Cyril Gane. Cyril landed some beautiful looking shots. He's got, for someone so big, he has got wicked fast pace. Those jabs really pop off. But what he did was he was able to keep Rozenstruik at bay with the long arms. I mean, there were a few times where he got pulled by Herb Dean for having his fingers outstretched. I think he officially got a hard warning, so he was very close to losing points. But it was the keeping him at bay with the long jabs, and then with the kicks to the, well, almost like the oblique kicks and the front kicks that kept Rozenstruik at bay. But going out of the the second and third round, Rosenstreich just looked absolutely gassed. Really, really glad, not wanted to be there. We got little spurts throughout the fight where it looked like he may get a second wind and throw a few punches. But as the commentary said, he was coming with one punch at a time. There was no kind of urgency from him to land more than one shot. And you could argue the same with Cyril Gagne, but the difference is Gagne was landing big hits, big shots, and really popping Rosenstreich. And to be fair, if I were Gagne, I wouldn't want to be getting into a dirty boxing fight with someone like Rosenstreich, because that motherfucker will clean you out in one punch. So basically we got 25 minutes of that, really kind of like a chess match of a fight. But unfortunately, Rosenstreich just wasn't up to the game. I would argue the fifth round was probably his best round, because he knew he had to go for it. So we saw a little bit more pressure for him, but there was just nothing there from him. Nothing like the finish to the Overeem fight. And Cyril Gagne picks up a well-deserved clean sweep of all the rounds and moves to 4-0 in the division.
Yeah, that's it. You can't blame him. He were able to get the job done. Rosenstreich, I don't know what he were. I understand. I can feel his coach, what his coaches were feeling like at the, obviously at the sideline, mm-hmm. when he banged up canvas and he.
Oh yes, he was fuming.
It's, well, you can just tell. It's like when you've got a fighter there and you've been, depending on how many weeks, whether it be that 6, 8, 12 week or whatever, depending mm-hmm. on how long camp is, and you've been working on drills constantly, day in, day out, and then your fighter goes in there and just starts throwing a couple of
things. Doesn't want to perform, yeah.
And then it doesn't want to like throw anything else, and doesn't want to try and connect, and doesn't want to engage. And then you've also got his opponent, obviously, Cyril Gagne. He was throwing a lot of things, yeah, fair enough. He was throwing a lot more than
Rosenstreich,
but it wasn't throwing that many. It's just because Rosenstreich was throwing near enough nothing,
mm-hmm.
and he was just this was another one. It was a boring fight, and from a card that has had some decent fights earlier on, it's like they got chitter on the line. So for every fight that got later on, it just got more and more crap. And I don't want to shit on the UFC, because I fucking love the UFC, like, but Jesus Christ, you've got the core main event that was known for finishers, and that went to decision with a boring fight, and then this one as well, finishers, and then it went to decision with a boring fight. None of them, the most exciting fingers were a nutshot.
Which wasn't even really what I thought. No. I thought it was high, it was almost like the waist, yeah. But we got through it. I mean, for every kind of like turn in the punch bowl, UFC have been providing us with some banging cards, so we've got to put up with some trap every now and again. But next week is a bigger UFC 259 triple title matches. Just looking at some of the prelims are massive fights in on the early prelims, so not even the televised prelims. You've got Tim Elliott taking on Jordan Espinoza. Going on to the televised ones, we've got Dominic Cruz against Casey Kenner, Song Yadong against Carla Phillips, Jose Benavidez on the early prelims taking on Askarov. And then a main card, a banger card all the way through. Thiago Santos versus Alexander Rakic. Islam Makhachev taking on Drew Dober. The bantamweight title up for grabs with Petr Yan taking on Aljamain Sterling. That should be an absolute war. The women's featherweight title, Amanda Nunes finally coming back to action to take on Megan Anderson. And then that main event, Israel Adesanya stepping up from middleweight, unbeaten record, taking on the Polish powerhouse of Jan Blachowicz. That is a massive fight. So I've got every hope that next week's card is going to deliver. At least two out of those three title fights are going to deliver massive, massive performances. So come back and check in for that. But yeah, you can follow me on Twitter @DAJKirtbear. Follow Carlos here at Kirby underscore Carlos. Follow the show at Five Rounds Pod, and then make sure you subscribe to all the networks that this show is on. That's Visionaries Global Media, The Chair Shot, and Shooting the Sports Ish. Thank you all for listening, and hopefully, thank God, that is now the end.
Adios, amigos.